Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation recorded live during the February 2022 online Midwinter Home Education Conference.
You guys, I am really, really excited to be here today. Just super excited. I feel like this is kind of the start of, it's the start for me of a new year of kind of homeschool conferences. I really enjoy going to these and attending these. And I feel like this last year, since I attended a conference last, I feel like I've learned a lot. And I have a few things that I really am excited to share with this group of individuals. And so I hope that you will enjoy it and find that you're blessed in your life because of what we can talk about today. Really quickly, Lisa did say this, but I want to repeat it. If you guys have any questions during the presentation as I go along, I tend to kind of get off and get going. But if you have some questions or any thoughts that you want to say or to ask, please put it in the text. Lisa will be monitoring that, and she'll make sure that we can stop and take care of that. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Nephi Zufelt. Really, all you need to know about me is I have five amazing kids. We are homeschooling them. My oldest daughter, Zoe, is 14, almost 15, down to my youngest son, who is Stratton, and he's 4 years old, turning five this year. And my family is just so important to me. It's such a critical part of my life. And it's funny because this whole, what I call my wealth mentality journey, it really began because of homeschooling. So when a few years ago, I had an opportunity to free up some of my time. My career and my life was kind of at a stage where I could free up a significant amount of my time. And as I was trying to think how I wanted to use that time, what I wanted to do with it, one of the key things I was looking at is how can I spend more time with my family, and what can we do together to learn and to grow? And as we started homeschooling our kids, I became very focused on helping them through that process. And I was really intent on teaching them some things that I felt I hadn't learned as a kid. And I'm sure you guys had some of those same feelings as you started homeschooling. You know, you look around and the skills and the things that you've learned through your life are pretty different than what was taught to you in the education system. And so there was this huge desire for me to teach my kids about money and about bank accounts and how money works and how credit works. And as I started to do that, it dawned on me eventually that those are all great, great, important things to learn, but they weren't really getting to the core of what I was trying to teach my kids. Because what I wanted to help my kids know is how they can be successful, how they can pursue a life that has freedom in it, freedom to do the things that they want, that will provide to them a certain amount of quote unquote wealth in their lives. And so that led me down this path of eventually I wrote a book called Katie Bell and the Wishing Well. And I wrote another book about entrepreneurship called the Big Startup Guidebook, and started going around and attending conferences and starting to teach what I call this wealth mentality. And so that kind of brings us to where we are today. And I'm very excited to share a few of my thoughts with you and to go through this. And hopefully, as we do this, you'll leave this. My goal today, I probably don't have any specific answers of exactly how you can create wealth in your life. But what I hope you walk out of here with is a framework that will help you pursue that in your own life, and also pursue that with your children and teach them how to pursue a life of wealth. So with that in mind, let's jump right in. To start, you got to go back with me, way back. This is me back when I think this is about probably 3 or 4 years old. So probably back in 83 or 84. And I grew up in a little town called Moab, Utah, which some of you probably know where that is. It's in the southeastern corner of Utah. And grew up, my dad had moved to Moab to mine uranium. And about the time this picture was taken, the uranium mines, of course, in Moab were shut down because we stopped mining so much uranium. And as a result, my dad was out of work. He had a young family. He was still quite young and didn't really know what to do, but was lucky enough that a guy in his ward came to him and said, look, if you're willing to work hard, I'll teach you how to lay carpet so you can provide for your family. And so back in 83, 84, my dad started laying carpet. And to this day, 40 some odd years later, well, not quite 40 years later, but to this day, my dad today literally is somewhere in Moab, Utah, laying carpet. He still lays carpet today, and he's done it for his entire career. But as you can imagine, laying carpet in Moab, Utah is not an extremely profitable venture. We grew up where, and my dad worked really hard. Both my parents were very frugal, but we didn't have a lot. We lived in a, you know, there were seven of us. I had four siblings, my parents. We were all stuffed into a single wide trailer that had two bedrooms and one bathroom. And to be honest, we lived this incredible, amazing life. My parents made it really great to live the way we did. And it wasn't until I started getting a little bit older in those teenage years where I started to realize that, you know what, we don't have a lot. We are what I would call poor. And it's interesting as I think back and reflect back on that, there were some experiences that I had as a youth, as a young man, that kind of started to impact the way I thought about money, and not in a necessarily positive way. And like most other parents of that era, we didn't talk about money in my family. I don't know how it was for you guys, but we didn't really. I left high school and I kind of knew what a checkbook was and I kind of knew what a credit card was. And that's about it. I didn't have much more information than that. And so, unfortunately, I looked outward. I looked into the world to try to gauge and get a bearing on what it meant to be wealthy. Because as I had grown up, I realized one of the things I wanted in my life was not to be poor. And that's not a great, purpose, but it's what I wanted. It's what I had at that time. And unfortunately, as I looked into the world, I think back to kind of the influences that I looked at, and it was very much focused on this idea that wealth is having lots of money. And the typical definition of wealth is an abundance of material possessions. And so that's what I was looking for. That's what I hope to have in my life. Now, you and I both know at this point that wealth is not just an abundance of material possessions, but that's what I thought it was. And so what I want to do, let's start with, what is wealth? What really is this idea of wealth? I want to make sure that we are on the same page and we both understand that word the same way, because the world says it's material possessions and we typically think of it as that, but we know inherently that it's not just about material possessions. So I kind of like words. Occasionally I like to dig in and look at definitions of words and what they are. And this is one of those cases where I went back and kind of wanted to know the evolution of this word wealth. And if you go back far enough, wealth is a combination of two different old English words that we have. One of them is health, which is our modern day health. But in this meaning, in this context, health meant whole or complete. And then that was combined with well or wella. Well or wheel, depending on where it was, wheel or wella, and that meant well-being, prosperity, and happiness. And so the original definition of health wealth, and what I take wealth to be, is this idea of completeness, wholeness in our lives, a life of well-being and prosperity and happiness, not just financial means, but much, much more than that. Wealth is not just money. In fact, it's just a little bit about money and mostly about the rest of our life. And so as I thought about this and I started to teach this to my kids, I broke this down. And it's interesting. I promise you, these four things that I came up with were before the church put out our youth program, which kind of line up very, very well with these things. But in my view, our wealth is divided into separate sections in our lives. So we have our health, we have relationships, personal well-being, and our finances being the last piece. And the way that I like to envision this, if you look over on the screen here on the side, I envision a stool. So, you know, the old milk stools, I don't know if you guys have ever milked a cow, but if you have a milk stool, it has three legs and it sits very nicely on most terrain because it has three legs that can be moved and adjusted to the terrain with a small seat on top. And if you think about that stool, the legs are made up of our health, our relationships, and our personal well-being. And the seat of that stool is our finances. And the reason that I arrange it that way and I think about that way is because if you think about health, we got this one leg of the stool. If we are not doing what we can to take care of our health, we let our health get away from us, right? We start to, maybe we're focused on that money piece in our lives. And we've seen people do this. I'm sure all of you know someone who's been so focused on maybe their career or advancing in something, getting material possessions, that they let that health piece kind of fall off to the side just a little bit. But the reality is, even if they achieve their financial goals, if they let that health piece drop off, they no longer have a stable stool. And they no longer have this idea of completeness and wholeness. They're not truly wealthy. Equally, you could say that if we let our relationships falter in our pursuit of money or other things, as we drop off that relationship piece, and you guys know people like this as well, right? There are people that in their pursuit of trying to get ahead, they've completely leave behind those relationships. And I've seen so many people, and it's really sad. They get to a point where they've achieved all of these great things. Maybe they've built the company they wanted. They've made the money they wanted. And they're so excited, and it's such a great day. And they turn around, and there's no one to celebrate it with because their relationships have just been destroyed along the way. I would say that someone who's lost their relationships, someone who lost their health or their personal well-being, meaning their spirituality or their emotional or mental stability and well-being, if they lose those things and they have the money, they're not truly wealthy. Wealth requires all of these different pieces. It can't be done on its own. Now, I don't want to belabor this too much because I think that everybody on this meeting and that's watching probably inherently understands that. But I do want you to remember this symbolism and this idea of the stool. If you can build health and work on your health and your relationships and your personal well-being, and then add finances to that, that is a holistic approach to this idea of wealth. And I'll tell you what, I've seen some incredibly happy and incredibly successful people that had very few finances, but they had good health and relationships and personal well-being. And so I would posit that finances and money are the last part of this entire equation. In fact, you can have pretty close to a very wealthy life with very few finances. But what I would also add to that, because I think sometimes we go too far the other way. I don't know if sometimes you guys feel like, oh, you know, money's the root of all evil, and we hear all of these things. What I would also say is when we can add that seed, the financial piece, number one, it makes life a little bit more comfortable. It makes it a little bit easier to do the things that we need to do in our lives to a certain point. And number two, which I think may be more important to remember, and as we teach our kids about wealth and teach them that it's okay to have money and finances, that the second piece is wealth in terms of finances allows us to fulfill purpose. It allows us to do things that we otherwise couldn't do. And as we pursue that purpose, we become happier, we become more prosperous, we become more complete, and we become more wealthy. And so the purpose of the finances is not so that we can have material possessions, but really it's in order to enable us to have purpose and fulfill purpose in this life. Okay, so I hope you guys, again, I don't want to belabor this because I think everybody understands that. But please teach that to your children if you haven't already. I'm guessing most of you have, but teach them this holistic approach to wealth. All right, so with that in mind, we're going to set that aside for a second. We now agree what wealth is. And I think all of us can agree that we want wealth in our lives. We want to pursue that wealth. And so the rest of the presentation, what I want to try to talk to you is I want to teach you a framework, a way to pursue wealth in your life, and not just financial wealth. Everything we talk about is going to be applicable to health and relationships and personal well-being. And I'll try to use some examples in here of different things other than just money. But if we want to pursue wealth and we're doing that righteously, then there's a way to do that that leads to a higher level of success and a higher rate of success. And that's what I want to talk about. But before we move on, let me just check. Let me see if I can check my chats really quickly here. I want to make sure that there are no questions. Lisa, did we have anything so far on the questions?
No, I've not seen anything at this
Okay, point. Does anyone have a question before we move on? Okay, I'm going to move on then. So here we go. Here's the framework. So I'm going to bounce through the framework pretty quickly, and then we're going to dive into each piece individually. And you guys, just so you know, this is a presentation. It's a little different than my normal presentation. Normally, I like to tell a lot of stories, and today, I really just want to give you a lot of information. So I hope you'll forgive me that we're going to be moving pretty quickly through stuff. I will throw in some stories and try to make it interesting, but I really want to get the information to you in the best way possible. So bear with me as we go through this. The foundation then of our wealth framework, we're trying to create true wealth in our lives. And it really starts with creating a foundation of correct principles. We'll talk a little bit about this in depth, but I love, you know, within the church, we have a really great understanding of what a principle is. Principles are truths that when applied will be true in all situations. So it's something that if it's true here in this application, it's also true over here in this application. And those principles are so incredibly powerful. And we'll go a little bit deeper into that and why I feel like in our education, especially as homeschoolers, we should be focusing on teaching principles, maybe not so much on skill sets, but maybe more on principles than skill sets. So we'll get into that in just a second. But the next level, interestingly enough, once we have created a foundation of correct principles, the next level is we want to learn skill sets specifically with the intent to build a system. We're going to talk about that word system quite a bit today. But basically, just a quick preview, what I'm talking about is if we go out and is in our education and in our lives, we learn all of these different skills. The goal is not to have a skill. The goal is not to just be able to do something. But what we want to do is take that skill set and organize it with other skill sets that will create a system that can produce wealth in our lives, whether that be physical health, whether that be relationship wealth, whether that be financial wealth, whatever it is. But those systems are really what create wealth, not the skill set. And we need to make sure we're differentiating that as we go through this. Once we've built the system, we have to go out and we have to face challenges. It makes no difference in our lives to spend all of our time creating this amazing, you know, getting all these great skill sets, learning correct principles, creating a great system, and then we never deploy it and actually use it to face challenges. It's only in those challenges that we start to create wealth. Nobody has ever, you know, if you, just a quick example, let's say you create an amazing system of stock trading. You learn about stocks, you learn about how to trade correctly, you create a system and it's awesome. But then all you ever do is, you know, you go on the stock market, you never actually trade, you just watch and you do phantom trading. Well, you're not going to get any wealthier by having a phantom trading system. You have to actually deploy it. You actually have to put it into practice. You have to face those challenges and push through them in order to build wealth in your life. And inevitably, when we face challenges, we're going to fail, and we're going to fail a lot. And that's actually, we're going to talk about today. Anybody who's heard me speak before has probably heard me talk about failure. I love this topic of failure. I think all of us need to be failing a lot more because failure is the precursor to success. And I want to talk about those failures and how we can maybe use failure a little bit better in our own lives and how we can teach our kids to face failure in the right way, to fail forward. This idea that when we fail, we don't just stop progression. If we're gonna trip and fall, we might as well fall forward to get us a little closer to our destination. And the last piece of our framework here is to teach others. This is a great Stephen Covey teaching, but essentially when we teach others, we learn it better ourselves, and it allows us to, again, fulfill purpose and bless the lives of other people. And as we do that, we become more inherently more wealthy. So that's the framework. Create a foundation of principles, learn skill sets to build a system, face challenges using those systems. When you fail, fail forward and teach others. Now, just a warning here. I think it's really easy to look at this little pyramid and think to yourselves, this is dumb. This is ridiculous. I know all this. This is too simple. I like to call these some principles we have. I like to call them Naaman principles. And you guys, this is a Naaman principles. Do you guys remember Naaman in the Old Testament? Naaman was he was an Assyrian. He was a captain in the Syrian army, and he got leprosy. And the king of Syria wrote to the people of Israel and asked if there anybody could help him. And the king said, yeah, we have Elisha, the prophet. And so they sent Naaman to go meet with Elisha. And Elisha was asked to treat this captain of the army of Assyria very, very kindly. And so he went, and as Naaman went, he was, I think, expecting this big pomp, you know, this big celebration, I guess. What happened as he came to Elisha, Elisha didn't even go out to meet with Naaman. Essentially, Elisha sent one of his servants out to meet Naaman and met him and said, oh, Elisha said, if you'll go bathe in the River Jordan 7 times, then your leprosy will be gone. And Naaman was furious. He's all offended. He's ticked off. He turns around. He starts heading back to Syria. And he's like, I can't believe the gall of this Elisha. He wouldn't even come out and see me. I'm the captain of the armies. And he's so frustrated. And one of his servants stops him and says, Naaman, like if Elisha had said, go and climb the tallest mountain in the world and you'll be cured of your leprosy, would you have done it? And he's like, yeah, of course I would have, you know, if it would have been something harder. And the servant's like, well, you need to, like, why wouldn't you do something so simple? And Naaman stopped and he did. He went to the river, washed, and was cured of his leprosy. Now, you guys probably know that story, but the principle there is sometimes we look at something and it seems so simple that we kind of put it to the side. But I promise you that if you will dig into this and just bear with me for a little bit here today, that you will get something out of this, that this will be an opportunity for you to either change your own life in some way, or perhaps learn how to teach your kids one of these principles that will help them in their lives. So don't throw this aside. I know it looks really simple. It's principles, skill sets, challenges, fail forward, and teach others. Very, very simple, but there's power in that simplicity. Okay, so let's dig in here. Let's first look at correct principles. So like I said, principles are truths that when in application are true in all situations. And a great example of this that I can think of is in our entrepreneurship class, we'll oftentimes teach our kids how to do Facebook advertising. You know, Facebook for the last 10 years has been a very powerful advertising tool. For small businesses, it's kind of changed what we've been able to do. Years ago, if you started a small business, you were very, very limited, unless you had a lot of money, to how much reach you had with your business, how many people you could connect with, and how many people you could sell to. But Facebook has kind of democratized that in some ways, and made it much easier, simpler, and cheaper to reach people worldwide with the products and services that we sell. And so it's been pretty powerful in that way. Now, there's a ton about Facebook that I hate, and I won't go into that. But in our class, we teach the skill set of knowing how to set up a Facebook ad, what buttons to click, you know, what it looks like on Facebook. We go through that whole process with these kids, which is important. But here's the problem. If all I ever taught those kids was how to click the buttons on Facebook, then it would work for them for a short period of time. But Facebook changes pretty often, and a year from now, it might be different. And 10 years, we might not even have Facebook. I don't know if you guys watched the stock price of Facebook lately, but it has cratered. I mean, it's way, way down in the last 3 weeks. And so Facebook may not even be a thing in 10 years. And if all I teach a kid is a skill set of how to create a Facebook ad, I really haven't done them much benefit. I haven't helped them as much as I really want them to. And so in our class, because we try to focus on principles first, before I ever teach them how to click the buttons to create a Facebook ad, I back up and I teach them a principle. And the principle is this. I teach them a principle of storytelling. People are convinced of things through good storytelling. And I teach them how to tell good stories. And I teach them how to break down stories and how to connect with people through stories. And by teaching people to be, these kids to be good storytellers, they can then take that story and they can create a Facebook ad that tells that story in a beautiful way, which will connect with people and grow their sales. And then 10 years from now, if Facebook is no longer a thing, well, they're still good storytellers. And whatever the new thing is, it won't be TikTok either, right? There'll be another one. But whatever the new thing is, all they have to learn is how to click the buttons. but they can still tell a good story. And so as we teach our children, I think it's so easy. Let me say that differently. It's really, really hard to teach our kids in a principle-focused way, because curriculum, there's really no curriculum out there that teaches kids principles. Most curriculum is skill set building. And we have to, it's so easy to just hand them the curriculum or whatever we're working on and have them go off and learn a skill set. And we feel once they've learned that skill set that we've succeeded because they've been educated and they now know something they didn't before. But I would say in some ways, I don't want to say fail. I don't want to be offended because you guys are amazing, great teachers. But in some ways, we're missing great opportunities to teach principles. If we can focus on correct principle teaching, we will be blessing the lives of our kids, not just for now, but forever. And remember, the reason principles are really, really important for our kids right now is that the world is changing at such an incredibly rapid pace. I was reading the other day, you know, that people, this was pre-pandemic, people were changing careers, meaning they were going from being accountant to being an engineer. People were changing careers every 7 years on average. And they were changing jobs every 2 to 2.5 years. Now that was before the Great Resignation, right? And now that we have that, it's even going to be faster. And what that means is we need our kids to be able to very quickly go from one thing to something else. And if you add the pressures of artificial intelligence and robotics that are taking jobs away at a very, very rapid pace, it doesn't seem that rapid because we've known about it for a long time. But if you look at what's really happening in the day-to-day work of our lawyers, doctors, engineers, it's those things are being taken over by artificial intelligence and automation pretty quickly. And it's not going to be long before we're not going to need so many of those individuals. And so what are these kids going to do at that point? If they don't know how to apply principles, if they don't even know the principles, all they know are skill sets, they're going to be a little bit lost. And so as I look into that future and I think, how can we better prepare our kids for a future where everything changes so rapidly? The other thing I would remind you of is that even right now, it used to be that we paid a lot of money for people that had knowledge. Knowledge was a very highly sought after and well-paid piece of information. But now, how easy is it to access knowledge, to access information? I don't have to know every single thing. I don't have to know all about everything. And even if I do know all about everything, I'm not much more valuable than somebody who doesn't, because that person that doesn't know those things, they know exactly where to get them. It's so easy to pull up your phone, to pull up a computer and find the information that you need. And so our economy and what our kids are growing up in is not an economy of knowledge. It's an economy of being able to innovate and create and be able to solve problems. That's what kids are going to need to do. And if we're focused on teaching skill sets, right? If my big focus is my kids are going to know the multiplication tables by heart, and they're going to know how to do square roots in their head, important things, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not saying don't teach that. But what I'm saying is, if that's all of the effort, and we're missing out on teaching principles, then we may not be serving them, and we may be missing the opportunity to help them in a way that they need to be helped. All that being said, I've beat it to death, right? We need to be focused on teaching principles. So let me give you three principles that I think you need to be teaching your kids right now. Okay, so I'll try to go through these quickly. Let's start with the I-beam. So this is a Hiram Smith analogy, not Hiram Smith, brother of Joseph Smith. This is Hiram Smith, co-founder of Franklin, who had the Franklin Planners and eventually merged with Covey and became Franklin Covey. So Hiram Smith was a great speaker. He would go out and speak to people all over the world. And he had this analogy of an I-beam that he would use. What he would do is he would go into the front of the class, all these people, and he would tell them, I'm laying out in front of you. In your minds, I want you to imagine an I-beam laying on the floor here. It's 100 feet long. You know, it's relatively narrow. It's a couple inches wide, 6 inches tall. And I want one of you to come up here, and you're going to stand on that side, and I'm going to stand on this side. And if you will cross that I-beam, I have $100 here waiting for you. And so then he would ask the crowd, so how many of you would cross that I-beam on the floor for $100? And pretty much every hand goes in, right? Like you and I, any of us, we would definitely cross an I-beam for $100 on the floor. And he said, okay, that's great. Now let's change this analogy a little bit. I'm going to take that I-beam, I'm going to put it on a crane. I'm going to raise it up 1,000 feet in the air. And it's 1,000 feet in the air. You're on one side, I'm on the other. There's a 30 mile per hour crosswind. You can't crawl, you have to walk. Now, how many of you would cross the I-beam for $100? And of course, you know, no hands go up for $100. Then he says, well, how about $1,000? Still no hands. How about $10,000? And maybe some guy in the back's like, yeah, I'd do it. Whenever I do this with kids, like if I put it up 1,000 feet and 30 mile per hour crosswind and I'm like $100, there's always like this 13-year-old boy that's like, yeah, I'd do it. Yeah, for sure. Right. He's totally into it. But most of us value our lives more than that. So Hiram says, how about 100,000? How about 1,000,000? And it's interesting because most of us, most people would not cross that I-beam 1,000 feet in the air, 30 mile per hour crosswind for even $1,000,000. We value our lives significantly more than that $1,000,000. Now, some of us would. But then what he does is really interesting. The last piece of this analogy, he says, let's switch it one more time. I'm going to take it up even higher, 2,000 feet in the air. Now, there's a 50 mile per hour crosswind. You're standing on that side and I'm standing on this side. And you have to cross it. But instead of holding a case with $1,000,000 in it now, I'm now holding one of your kids. And if you don't cross that I-beam, I'm going to drop this kid. Now, it's an extreme example, right? But all of a sudden, most of us would cross the I-beam, or at least attempt to cross the I-beam. And the point of that analogy, which I think is so powerful, is that money really is not a great motivator. It's not a great purpose in our lives. But there are things in our life that we would cross that I-beam for. There are things that we would dig deep and push through and make it happen. And as the principle is, we have to find what our purpose is. And we have to help our kids understand what their purpose is. And until we find that purpose, it's going to be very difficult to truly go through the challenges that are required in order to succeed and become and achieve those things. Wealth will never be created by someone who doesn't have a purpose, a true purpose. And it generally can't be just for money, because it's just not a powerful enough motivator to get us across that I-beam. Now, this is really, really hard. And I have taught my kids this since they were very, very little. And even now, my 14-year-old, my 12-year-old, I'm like, so what is your purpose? What do you want to accomplish? And I walk them through this and they're like, I don't know. I don't know. And that's okay, right? Like, I don't expect my kids and I don't expect your kids to know what their purpose in life is for the rest of their lives. I don't even expect you to know what your purpose in life is for the rest of your life. But what you do need to figure out is what is an I-beam purpose that's powerful enough to move you to the next step? And you need to help your kids figure out what that purpose is. Do you ever have this experience where your kids, they find something that they're just intrigued by, that they just inherently are excited about? And all of a sudden, education becomes so simple. It's not even hard to get them to do those things because they're excited. They do it themselves. They teach themselves. I think sometimes, I know in my family, in my life, I don't spend enough time helping them find those things, helping them establish that purpose, that high-level purpose. Because once you do, those kids will just, they'll walk through fire to get there. They love it. They're passionate about it. And we individually, once we have that purpose, we'll walk through fire to achieve those things. So, principle number one, we have to focus on finding purpose first before we ever start trying to accomplish what we're trying to accomplish. Number two, let's do pie. Down there in the bottom right corner, we have some apple pie. I love pie, you guys. My favorite pie is banana cream pie. And when we were kids, Thanksgiving was an amazing time at my house because it was pie day. Like, we had all kinds of different pies laid out and I loved every one of them, but banana cream pie was always my favorite. And in my family, interestingly enough, we only had one single banana cream pie that we would, that we'd put out. And so what it became every single Thanksgiving was me and my three brothers and a few of our cousins. It was a mad rush to stuff as much food into our faces as we possibly could, as fast as we possibly could, because we knew that if we didn't get to the pie fast enough, if we didn't get to that banana cream, it would be gone. And so there was this very much this scarcity mentality. There's only one pie. If I don't get there, someone else is going to get it. This is all out war to try to shove this food in our mouths and make sure that we get some banana cream pie. I remember one year I was just done with it. I'm like, I love banana cream pie. Why are we fighting over banana cream pie? And so as we were getting ready for Thanksgiving, and I don't remember how old I was. I'm probably much older than I'd like to admit. As everyone is getting ready, we always set the pies in the other room. And I remember sneaking into that room and grabbing that banana cream pie and quietly sneaking it back to my bedroom and sticking it under my bed. And of course, it wasn't long before the theft was discovered and everybody was frantic and I wasn't admitting that I had taken the banana cream pie. And everyone was freaking out. My mom was just, you know, because she already had so many other things to do, but she quickly whipped up another banana cream pie, which I was like, what? There's more? You could have made more banana cream pie. I was kind of frustrated by the whole situation, but she made another banana cream pie and Thanksgiving was saved and everybody was happy. And to this day, nobody knows that I took that banana cream pie, other than all the people that are now listening to me tell the story. But that the rest of that week, I had a spoon and I would go back in my bedroom and when no one was around, I'd pull that banana cream pie out and I would take just little bites at a time. And I totally enjoyed. And it got to a point where I think it was starting to mold a little bit on one side, if I remember correctly. And I had to kind of pick around the mold a little bit. I mean, it was probably very, very unsanitary and very unhealthy, but man, I really enjoyed that banana cream pie. But you guys, this is a perfect example of what I like to call scarcity mentality. This idea that there's not enough. And so we have to fight and we have to do all we can to get our piece of that pie. And it's a very backwards way of thinking about the world, because in reality, it may seem like it's scarce and the world wants us to think it's scarce. And if you guys watch any news at any point these days, I mean, everything is about scarcity. There's not enough of anything for anyone, anywhere. And it's a huge problem, according to the talking heads. But the reality is this: we live in a world of abundance. And I know that's true because I know that God is a God of abundance. And because he's a God of abundance, he has provided abundantly. There may be moments of scarcity, but in general, we have an abundance. And especially in our day and time, we have so much abundance. We have so much more than our ancestors did. But if you are not careful, the world will convince you and convince your children that it is scarce. And we have to do all that we can to fight against that. Help your children understand that there is so much out there for them. There are so many blessings and good things. Principle number two is think in abundance, not scarcity. Number three, the rocks. So my sister-in-law tells this great story of when she was a kid. Her dad was an entrepreneur and she's watched him kind of start and run businesses and she loved that. So one day when she was quite young, she thought, you know, I want to make some money and I think I can do this. I think I can sell something. And so she got her wagon. She went out into the street in her neighborhood. She pulled her wagon down to her neighbor's yard and right in the neighbor's front yard, she picked out some of her favorite rocks from the neighbor's yard and put them into her wagon. And then she just boldly and just walked right up to her neighbor's door and knocked on the door. And when they answered, she said, I would love to sell you some beautiful rocks. Would you be interested in buying? Now, these are the rocks right out of their own yard. I would love to sell you some rocks. Would you be interested in buying some rocks from me? And she made, I don't know how much, she never said how much she made. I don't know if she even remembers, but she probably made 10, 15, 20 bucks. Her neighbors actually bought their own rocks back from her out of her little wagon. And they did that because she was a cute little kid and she was showing a little bit of hustle, and everybody loves a kid that shows hustle, right? And if you think about it, like every lemonade stand in the history of lemonade stands, it's basically a charitable event. You know, like we don't actually want the watered down lemonade, but we see kids hustling and we want to reward them for that. And so we go to these lemonade stands and we buy the lemonade. But as our kids get older and as they start to learn more, it's really important, you guys, that we help our kids go from a charitable event. So, you know, this charity idea, we need to move them to understand that everything in life, if we want more of anything, if we want anything in life, we have to create value for someone else. We have to create value, I should say. If I want to have more money and I'm going to start a business, I better create value for my customers. If I'm not creating value for my customers, my business will not last very long. If I work for someone else and I'm not creating value for that person, I'm probably not going to have a job very long. If I want to have a good relationship, I better find a way to create value. If I want to have better health, I better create value by doing the work it requires to strengthen my body and to increase my health. Value creation is such a core and important principle. And you guys, it's not being taught. I could go on. I'm not going to, but I can tell you so many stories of people I've hired or people that work for me that just have no concept of this idea that need to be creating that. They think if they show up at work and they do what I've asked them, then that's enough and they should get paid for that. And they have no concept that what I'm paying for them is to create value. It's so important that we teach our kids these three principles. First, purpose, abundance, and value creation. Now, there are many, many, many others. And I hope you'll take the time to dig in and find those. But please at least teach these ones to them. And we need to move on here because I'm rambling. But let me stop really quickly. Lisa, let me just check in. Are we have any questions to this point?
I haven't seen any questions at this point.
Yeah, you know, I'm such a great teacher, you guys, that nobody has any questions. That's what it is. please, if you do have questions, feel free to reach out and ask those. I have no problem stopping. Okay, so we've talked about that core.
We do have a comment.
Okay.
Sarah, if you want to
My thought is, because we've been reading this book, this principles book by whatever guy that is, principles. I feel like sometimes the idea of living by principles gets in the way of just ordinary living. Just let's make a plan and let's just do it, because we have to wait and stop and figure out the principle and have to do it with the principle before we can start doing it. So that makes sense. Sometimes principles get in the way of just my life. And that kind of annoys me.
Understand. And Sarah, I think that's a great point, right? It's kind of this idea. I've known people in my life who say, you know, I'm not going to take action until the Lord asks me to. You know, I'm going to pray about every single little thing, right? And then it becomes this, almost this, well, I'm not going to do that because the Lord didn't tell me to do that. And the Lord says, that's not the way the Lord runs things, right? He doesn't want to command in all things. I would say the same thing kind of applies to principles. I do think that when we're trying to accomplish purpose, we're trying to move forward, we're trying to learn, we're trying to improve and advance, we need to look for those principles and we need to look for ways to teach them in natural and easy ways. But I also don't think we should just stop our lives and not do anything, right? Like we need to be continually moving forward with our lives and learning principles in every way that we possibly can and then applying those. So I think that's a great comment. Thank you so much for that.
Okay. And then, one more comment.
Go ahead.
I don't know. I don't want to say this right, but what if your principles get in the way of my principles and then we have conflict? Because I'm living my principles and you're living your principles, but they don't match. Like
yeah.
that's my problem too.
And that's life, right, Sarah? I mean, my principles are not always going to match up, and our values are not always going to match up, our ideas. And so in that situation, we have to find ways to negotiate, especially if it's not a relationship that is close to us and it doesn't matter, then you don't have to do that. But if it's my husband or my wife, I have to look and try to figure out how we're going to move forward that way. But I would caution everyone in those situations, there is truth, right? The world tries to convince us that there is no truth, but there is truth at a certain point, and we need to hold true and hold tight to those true principles. Thank you so much. Okay, let's move on to the next step. So we got this foundation of principles. Now let's talk about skill sets and systems. And guys, I love this. I love it so much. And I hope that you're going to love it as well. Skill sets are really important. We want to learn and teach us skill sets throughout our own lives. We want to teach them to our kids throughout their lives. But here's what I find people running into is sometimes we focus so much on the skill set that we don't actually have a purpose or a direction for that skill set. And again, remember, we're not trying to just learn skill sets. We're trying to create wealth in our lives. We're trying to become better and create wealth. So an example I like to use here is when I was a kid, I loved sports. I played a lot of basketball in high school. I played soccer. I did track and field, but I loved every sport. I mean, if there was a ball or something involved, I loved it. I was like a dog. I'd chase any ball around any field. As I got a little bit older in my high school career, my coaches, they're like, Nephi, you have to start lifting weights. I was like 6 feet tall when I was 13, but I probably weighed 100 pounds or maybe 120 pounds. I mean, I was just this thin rail kid. And they said, you have to start lifting weights if you want to continue to advance and you want to become a better player. And if you ever want to play at the next level, you're going to have to become strong. And so I would go in the weight room and they would teach me skill sets. They'd teach me, this is how to do the proper bench press. This is how to properly squat. And they would teach me all of these skill sets. And they say, now go do it, you know, go work out, get strong. And you guys, here's the problem. I'm inherently a very proud person. And I've always fought against my ego and I get easily offended by things. And it's been a big problem in my life. And as a kid, it was especially a problem. And so I went into the weight room and I look around and there's all these big football players who, you know, they get under the bench and they put all the plates on, all the weight. And they're just boom, throwing out these huge reps. And I walk over and I put on these two tiny weights, right? And I'm struggling to push the bar up because I'm 120 pounds. I had no muscle. And so instead of doing what I probably should have done, I kind of just wandered around. I would go every single time we needed to be in the weight room in order to play sports. I would go to the weight room and I would just kind of wander around and do a couple of things, talk to my friends, and eventually walk out. Now, I knew the skill sets, I had the knowledge, but I had no system of how to actually become stronger. I had no idea how to put those skill sets together and organize them in a way that actually helped me improve and improve my physical wealth, right? My body, my strength was important to me, but I didn't know how to do it. And it was years later, and I'm sad to admit, it's actually only been in about the last year and a half, where I had a neighbor here who said, hey, Nephi, if you want to come work out in our workout facility, he's built this beautiful workout facility at his house. He said, if you want to come out in the mornings, you're welcome to do so. And I'm like, oh, there's not anybody around. I don't have to feel embarrassed. Yeah, maybe I'll do that. And as I got into weightlifting the last year and a half, I created a system not just of what weight to lift and when, but that's definitely part of it, but a nutrition plan of how I can feed my body and have the nutrients that I need in order to build muscle and to become stronger. Now you're looking at me and I'm obviously not this huge muscle head. There's not been a lot of improvement, to be honest, but I have created a system that I love and something that has really, really benefited my health and benefited me in a big way. So what I'm trying to get to here, you guys, let me just say it as simply as I possibly can. Skill sets are wonderful, but they only create wealth when they're put into a system. Let's just talk about financial wealth for just a second. Oftentimes people say, Nephi, what should I do if I want to make a lot of money? How do I become, you know, quote unquote, rich? And they said, should I go to school, become a doctor? Should I do real estate? What should I do? And my answer back to them is, well, what do you like to do? What are those things sound appealing to you? Because the reality is you can create a system of wealth with any one of those different directions. If you take the time to learn how to be a good real estate investor and you really dig in, you get the knowledge, you get the skills, and then you create a system of how you're going to be a real estate investor, you're going to find success in that. On the same page, if you really want to go to school and become a doctor and you do that and you get through everything and you start making good money, and then you use that money to then create a system of investments that are going to pay out for you long term, and you create this system that is going to be self-sustaining, that's another way, a great way of becoming financially free, becoming financially independent. If you want to start a business and you take all the time required to learn how to run that business, and you take you go and you start businesses and you learn through that process, and you create a system that will run by itself with employees and technology that doesn't require you to be there all the time. That's a wonderful system of how to build wealth. But the point is, it doesn't really matter what the system is. The system is just what you love doing and find satisfying. But the point is you have to create a system. When it breaks down is when a doctor goes to all those years of school and accumulates all that debt, and then they spend the rest of their lives from the time they get out of school until they're 60, 70, 80 years old, every single day going in and just working because they need the money. You know, they make some money, they spend the money. They make some money, they spend the money. And heaven forbid they ever, something happens, they get in a car accident and they can no longer be a doctor or a surgeon. And all of a sudden now they don't have a way to support themselves because they haven't created a system. But that same doctor who made some money and took that and started investing in other things, invested in maybe real estate or investing, you know, they create this other system. That doctor who has a car accident is going to be okay because they have these other systems working for them. And it's applicable in all things. Does it, relationships, we have to create systems in our relationships. It does no good if I love my wife and I know how to talk to her in certain ways to negotiate or to resolve conflicts. But if I don't have a system of how I'm going to do a weekly date with her and do these things and these things, then I'm not gaining the wealth in that relationship that I have the opportunity to do so. And unfortunately, when you're not gaining that wealth, sometimes you're losing a little bit of that. Systems are powerful. Two quick things about systems. So first of all, yes, please, in all areas of your lives, we need to be trying to gain skill sets to create systems of wealth that will move us forward in those things. Oftentimes I get asked, yeah, but I tried, you know, how many of you guys have gone to a whole bunch of effort to like create this new family system, right? Like, we're going to do it this way now. We've got, this is the chore chart, and this is this, and you got this beautiful thing. You put all this time, and like 2 weeks later, it's just absolute chaos, and it totally doesn't work, and it gets abandoned because it just fell apart. Two reasons I think systems don't work. Number one is that oftentimes they become too complex. When we have too much complexity in a system, then it doesn't actually move us towards the wealth that we are wanting to accomplish. I mean, look at the education system. What a total crazy, complicated system that has become, or the healthcare system, right? They're so complex that they almost can't be fixed because there's just too many pieces and too much complexity to it. We have to avoid those super ultra complex systems. Keep it simple. But the second reason I think systems fail is because we're inflexible. We're not willing to change. I mean, how many people, you know, prior to the dot-com bubble, let's go back pre-2000s, you know, they created these systems of internet websites, and they were making lots of money. Everything was good. And then the dot-com bubble burst, and so many of them lost that system. And instead of figuring out, how do I create a new system, they just kind of gave up, right? Like, they I don't know how to do it anymore. We have to be flexible. We have to change. We have to figure out what works and what doesn't work and gain new skill sets and add that into the system. And then maybe take this skill set out because it's not working in the system. That system has to be flexible. It's got to adjust as we go through that process. All right, I've got a few more minutes here. Let's talk about challenges. Challenges, when we start to face, when we've created our system, we have to deploy it. We have to face the challenges. I remember the first time that I decided I was going to be an investor. I invested in a hybrid car technology, just like an early stage. I got like 5% of the company, and I was very involved with a lot of the pieces of it. And here's the thing. Before I had done that investment, I had learned a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, I had an MBA, and I always wanted to and be an investor and be an entrepreneur, but I never did it. I just kind of sat on the sidelines. And so nothing actually ever happened until I finally took this leap and started to work with this hybrid technology. And you guys, it was a total failure. Like, it never amounted to anything, but the learning that I had, the things that I grew so much in that process of working through that company, and it set me up so that I was ready to then move on to another company and another company and do some different things that I never would have had the courage to do or the knowledge to do if I hadn't faced the challenges of trying to start that hybrid car technology. And so we need to push out and get into the challenges as often and as quickly as we can. One really important thing here, don't wait. You know, if you want to be a business owner, if you want to create a business, don't wait. Don't be like, oh, I'll do it when I figure this out or that out. Don't do it. You know, do it now. An imperfect system facing a challenge is better than no system at all. And it's better than not tasting the challenge at all. So take it on and move forward. With that in mind, you're going to fail. It's going to happen. I promise. And that's, this is a house that I bought in Memphis, Tennessee. It was a total failure, guys. We bought the thing in 2007, right before the crash. And we bought it for like $80,000. And right after the crash, it was worth about $10,000. We moved out of Memphis and we're like, oh, we'll just rent it out for a while. And so for like 15 years, we rented our house out and had, you know, somebody managing it for us. And at the end of the 15 years, the management company said, well, the tenant's moving out. We don't want the house anymore. You can take it back. Well, I went to Memphis. Actually, I sent a friend to Memphis and he took some pictures and the house was just absolutely destroyed, the whole thing. And so after all of that time, after all the headache we'd gone through, I ended up selling the house for about $30,000 and took a huge loss. And the whole thing, it was just this absolute huge failure, just major, major failure. But man, it set me up so that when I was ready to do some other investments, I had learned so much. That failure was really important. And we failed forward and we went into the next one and we did it better and we failed forward from there. And failure is such an important part of our lives. We've got to fail more. And I know that sounds weird, but we need to help our kids fail more and we need to celebrate those failures. Every week, Sunday dinner, we talk about our failures. A couple of weeks ago, my daughter, we took her to the swimming pool and she was trying to climb up this climbing wall. And I told her, hey, if you get to the top of the climbing wall, I'll give you a candy bar. And she tried and she tried and she tried for an hour. She tried to get up that wall and she just couldn't do it. She just kept falling down into the water. And we got home and she said, well, did I get a candy bar? I said, no, you didn't make it to the top. And she was so distraught and so upset. And I said, you know what, Melina, this is a great failure. So that Sunday, she told us about her failure. We all clapped. We said, man, Melina, what a great failure. You tried so hard. That was awesome. The next week, we go back to the water park. Boom, she climbs right to the top. She failed forward. She went and she tried it again. She didn't give up, but she turned that failure into a success. You guys, we've got to help our kids fail more often. Teaching, we've got to teach others. Once we know these principles, once we've started to build that wealth in our lives, sharing that with others is so powerful. Finally, don't do stupid. What I mean by that is if you want to be poor, let me tell you how to be poor. Become addicted to some substance or go get pregnant when you're a teenager or do any other number of just really, really stupid things. That's what leads us away from wealth in our lives. We have to avoid the stupid. Now, stupid doesn't, you know, it doesn't doom us forever, but it definitely puts us on a course that is much, much more difficult to travel than if we just avoid the stupid. So just don't do stupid, okay? Guys, this is wonderful. Thank you so much for your time. If you need any help with this, if you want to learn more about some of the principles you can teach, how you can teach them, if you want to learn more about entrepreneurship, come visit us at wealthmentalityfamilies.com. We have resources there. We have courses and classes and books, and we would love to help out in any way we possibly can. But thank you so much for your time.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.